Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
using MRI scans to detect small, in my case, small strokes inside the brain. And I'll give an overall talk about it. Now, just to put this in context, you'll hear me talking and breathing as I'm going up and down hills. Part of the cardiac after having a heart operation. So cardiac refers to heart and heart operations. I won't get into the heart operation too much, but there's been sort of two strands of recovery. One is getting your cardiac health up and keeping focused together, I suppose, psychologically, together with a lot of continuous exercise. And then there's also the cognitive or brain aspect of it, how well your brain refers to. So cognitive means thinking ability to remember, process, think, compute, respond, all those sorts of things. So you've got to do that level of cognitive therapy. And depends where you're at. So if you've been at a particular level, you've got to, your rehabilitation's got to be aimed at getting up to that particular level, or what skill sets you have before you're going to try and get back, and obviously, with all things, you set yourself a high bar, and in this case, I've sort of just used the combination of the cognitive effort of getting podcasts together, reviewing what you speak, coherent speaking, together with computer programming, robotic computer programming. And so I've basically programmed up something, and it is actually now. Before, it was a little bit off. I had to press a button to say I have actually put the dictaphone, which I'm speaking to at the moment as I'm walking along, in the computer. Then it reads it, puts it out, publishes it, how's your father, and eventually puts it into a podcast. And so that keeps me going. And cognitively, that's one aspect of it. The other cognitive aspect is that while I'm walking, I've got to watch where I'm walking, but also remember and pull up terms and sort of manage forgetting terms as I come along. So in this particular one, I'm going to talk at the clinching images, which tell you, show you exactly where the little microstrokes are. I'm not going to go into how many they are and where they're at, there is an image that you can see, and it's the most fantastical thing. So your brain is got a three-dimensional image. So you've got a picture. The actual image is a three-dimensional image, and you can play a movie going through your brain and pick up the little, I suppose, strokes, or I call it ischemic. They've got various terms for it. And as I go through it, I'll perhaps remember them a bit more. So ischemia is one term saying death due to lack of blood, or requiring lack of blood. And so if there's been clots, as they do occur, you have this localized death of brain tissues. And of course, an organ's a big thing, and so it takes a lot of effort to, it's like this beautiful rewiring computer, a lot of effort to rewire it. And it's, when I say effort, often say if I've slightly built up the length of my podcasts, or podcasts 3 or 4 hours a day, you'll see my podcast ability drop off on about the third podcast. Sort of long range running, and I'll be quite tired. And so I did a full set of cognitive tests to actually pinpoint areas that I'm deficient on, and that a good 4 hours of hard testing I've absolutely wasted by doing that. This is one of the things, it's hard to understand that actually brain work, when you're working against it, is actually a bloody tiring thing. I don't know, you just feel sleepy at the end of it, that's all I can say. You just go into a very deep sleep. Okay, someone come up to speak with me. No, this is a car slowly turning round. Oh, it's a peep later. Up late at night, and it's been... So I'm walking just after a big AFL game. It's 11:20 at night, and this group of P-platers, which is one of my friend's sons, was in the back of the car, recognized me, stopped, and I had a good old chat, trying to do what they typically do with school kids is... pull your leg and that type of stuff. But we're back at the basic thing of the inner situation. There's bits of your brain which have had these effects, and there's this technology which can take a three-dimensional photograph of your head, whereas previously you had to cut people open or take an X-ray and look in two dimensions. This takes a three-dimensional picture, and it basically has a copy of your brain in computer memory in three dimensions. So if you imagine a chest of drawers with drawers down and drawers up, say five drawers down and five drawers up, that would, and you check what's in each of those drawers, you'd be able to map and form a crude picture. And if there were thousands of drawers left and right, it would be a very fine picture that you could get. And if you increase that to drawers within drawers, further back, you could get three-dimensional information. And what I'm going to do is talk about this particular... a technique, settings on their machine that can actually get this information, this critical information, which can put in filters and actually pick with extreme detail to with incredible accuracy the intensity and quantity and amount inside your brain, which has been affected, so you can see exactly what's going on. Now, unfortunately, or fortunately or not, I suppose I've sort of logically said, oh, sure is, I've got to improve. No matter what the cause is, I don't know what the cause is, I've got to, yeah, this is a barrier, I've got to get up there, and it was basically, if you can't get up there, you'll find out, and that will be greater information. So this, the great thing is, I suppose, that people listening to me, that I've, eventually improved, or got a level of improvement. I don't know how much the improvement will go, and there's certain things which are hard. There are certain things which are perhaps a little bit easier, that sort of the effort of training has opened up other paths. And so we've got to talk about this fantastic three-dimensional camera which can be tuned and give you your brain on a computer disk with the areas of problems highlighted. Isn't that the fantastic sort of thing? This is, I remember going into lectures in, 87, 86, speaking to people, and they were talking about MRI, magnetic resonance, imaging. Just to tell you, back in 86, I'll just stop talking so I don't script this person out. MRI used to be called NMR, nuclear magnetic resonance. And of course, what would happen is they would say to patients, we're going to take you to an enema. And they'd say, I'm not going. I don't care. I don't want an enema. And because of that, they changed the name to MRI. And MRA for blood flow to see what's going on. And the story of MRI is an incredible one, for me at least, having understood it very early on from speaking to the researchers early on, then going into school and people charging ahead and saying, oh, look, there's better marks in medical science, teaching medical science, let's do it. And coming across and then trying to relearn it from the school grade books and the YouTubes and stuff like that. And, I didn't really understand what was going on. It seemed to contradict a lot of the basic things that I had understood from sort of high level physics. Didn't seem to somehow magically apply. So the laws of physics that I learnt as a physicist didn't apply to the school books. And I suppose it was a bit, had other things on my mind, a lot of things to do, but I really couldn't quite explain what's going on. And this is Cope saying that the existing body of explanations that you're likely to encounter are wrong, and by listening to this, you'll encounter the more correct answers, I would hope, coming along to get there. So why don't people warn you? Well, indeed, I must admit, there must be very few people who really understand all the science step by step. And myself, there are little bits that I still don't understand. But my understanding is stronger. There's bits which aren't there, but I can work out, because it has to be one or the other going down from it. So another way of saying it, as a scientist or a laser physicist, I'm used to a piece of equipment and there's a pea plate, so nearly gave me a heart attack. Thank goodness, oh, my heart's much better now. Shit, that's great. You got that sequence there we have to look at to try and understand what's going on. I suppose I have the advantage of recognizing where there's a gap several advantages. One, having a bit of when I say high level physics, I'm not saying that in an egotistical way. I'm saying it in a very humble way. You come against areas that you cannot understand. They're beyond the dimension of human understanding. So it's a very humbling thing to understand. And if someone comes along and says, I understand greater than three dimensions or four dimensions, but they can't communicate it to anyone, it's their own sacred understanding, I don't know, it's sort of like, I would consider some sort of psychotic fooling. Like, you can imagine that you are the King of England and there's only one person who that would be valid to. But there is some deep understanding underneath it. That's one zone of advantage. And also, as an experimentalist scientist, you know that you can progress the experiment to a point where it has to be one or two points out, and you can put it aside, sort of like people telling you the plan for a party to meet up in the bush and stuff like that. The actual detail of how you're going to get the petrol and what route you're going to take, you can put that aside and say, well, when I get there, I'll be able to work out these two ways. So that's a bit where it is at the moment. So let's do what the objective is. You stick your head in this enormous magnetic field, and your brain is turned into, every pixel of your brain in that magnetic field is turned into a radio transmitter which receives and issues radio signals. And the way that it's done is done in such a way that the computers can pick out what part of your brain is sending signals out and what how it's responding, and how it's responding, and then sort it in computer in three dimensions. Well, it could be in three dimensions in the computer if you really wanted to, and there are examples of three-dimensional computer chips. If I can say it, this is something which is clear to me in terms of that I'm really stretching my cognitive ability. Doing heaps of study, which is just bring in the stuff. I'm not at a university, I don't have a stimulating environment. I'm just going to truck along and truck as much information as possible, and then go on, and when the memory comes back, I can sort of remember certain things, so I can remember Microscope cross point, is it? Something around the point. It's not Microsoft. See, this is the example of it in terms of I'm chocking in the brain stuff and I can't quite get it up. There's a chip, a very famous chip manufacturer. Can't think of the name. It will come back to me. Intel. See, there you go. Intel. It's, it took a while to go, and it's 3D point, 3D cross point, 3D something or other point. But I sort of remember that it's to do with the chalcogenite glasses and the resistiveness. You can program the resistiveness by 3D. That's an example of 3D chips. You can actually have 3D chips to store memory in them. So in essence, that your brain could be actually stopped in three dimensions. What it is actually stopped in the nice thin slices, which can be assembled in three dimensions, and it could be given to a three-dimensional printer to print things out. Of course, we can only see things in two dimensions, so the fact that it can go through, and the process of cutting through a three-dimensional data set is cut. The word atom means I cannot cut an atom, but tomography is the Greek to cut. And so you can get tomographic scans through your brain, tuned finely up to pick up, differentiate these things. And it's called FLAIR, the word fluid recovery. This is my memory thing. If I struggled for a while, I'd be able to pull it up. And so that's, if I can say, I'm doing several levels of cognitive stuff at the same time. One is exercising, and cognitively for the brain, I've got to actually start running. Oh, geez, that's going to kill me. Far out. As I understand the various things as it's coming up, but doing the physical stuff, the stuff of speaking, but also the stuff of recalling this information. And let's see what we're aiming for. We're aiming to give you a physicist's insight into FLAIR, what is actually going on. And as said, I have an advantage which I have over other school teachers in that I do understand deep physics, and the assertion that you don't need deep physics to understand things, is a basically an assertion. It's a wish. I wish I don't need deep physics, but if you do understand it and you do realize that you do need it, it becomes unrealistic wish. And if you want to keep believing you don't need deep physics to really understand basically what's going on, it requires a demeanor of ignorance, and if you choose not to have that, you risk little by little freeing up the space for you to be quite, I suppose, bullying, heavy-handed and stuff like that. And we're not going down that way. I hope you can understand it. So with this demeanor of ignorance, we're really going to go into the heavy physics of things. Now, the most fundamental thing is that throughout your brain, in the water in your brain, H2O, in the fatty tissues, in the proteins, there's hydrogen everywhere. And hydrogen is made out of an electron and a proton. Okay, this is the basic stuff. It's not too much about it. Now, the quantum mechanics of electron, I celebrate. I enjoy. To understand full quantum mechanics, and I'm not saying this to upset people. What I say does contradict what people are saying, are teaching, but I don't contradict them to elevate myself or put anyone down. I just experience the equations, experience the supercomputers, experience the molecules, and my experience is more rewarding, and the other traditional way is a waste of time for themselves, and also almost unethical in terms of the amount of waste of time. So we're talking about the Bohr atom, the tiny little electron which spins around and all that type of guff. Where I think your own personal beliefs are your own providence. You know, obviously, we live in a highlighted society that where you can do what you want, think what you want, as long as you don't hurt other people. Well, we just can let you be, let you live. Okay, that's okay. But if you choose to teach, and you choose to teach something, and then choose to not contemplate the effect of what you're teaching, that's like a doctor who chooses to treat but not see the effect on the patients, and not read the long-term literature and all that type of stuff. So, we're talking about hydrogen, and this is yet another area I'm trying to actually break things down. So let's get your brain, or a brain, which we're going to stick in a huge magnetic field and get computers to look at it. In this huge magnetic field, it's full of hydrogen. It's full of oxygen, nitrogen, lots of phosphor. Phosphorus is really cute because it's also got this fantastic property. But the hydrogen electron is interesting because it determines a lot. And the hydrogen themselves, the hydrogen nucleus, is incredibly small. The electron is incredibly large. Dimensionally, in any one dimension, it's 1,000 times wider, 1,000 times taller, 1,000 times deeper. And 1,000 times 1,000 times 1,000 is 1,000,000,000 times bigger. In fact, why not put closer to 10 billion times bigger when you put the numbers in. and how it can be, I thought, well, it is the way of quantum mechanics. If you look at the Schrodinger wave equation, understand that, and I'll give another talk now. I'm just going to give you a bit of warning that I'm now after a break. I have to really push myself, so I'll be going down and up hills. I may have to stop podcasting as I go down some pretty, well, not down, it's when I go up some of the hills. It's going to be pretty hard to see who these guys are. They don't look good. Turn off. Oh God, sorry. I had to stop there as these pea platers come across. It is a peaceful night, and it's a peaceful world in Australia. Really, there is, well, I don't know. I haven't met a bad guy yet. Oh, there's been some rough areas, but sort of, oh, I don't know. Not out here. There's been some some dangerous places, but not around here. Okay, so what I'm saying is that that's what it is, and you can see so much more where things are at. So if I could sort of explain just around here, like it's super misty and stuff like that. It's as though there's a you've got a school group and you're taking in a bus to a lookout, but, you know, it says another 100 metres to look out, and you just keep them in at the gift shop, and it's just sort of, they can buy models of it, and they can't actually see the view if they go to get the lookout, and if you suggest politely that they should go and look at the lookout, you just get roughed up. Even though the people, actually physically there's no roughed up, you do get roughed up. But if I can really say that about quantum mechanics, and what I'm going to tell you about the nucleus, which is really important, that tiny little grain that's got 2,000 times more mass than the electron, and so it's 2,000 times smaller in each dimension, which means it's much smaller than the electron. It's sitting there, and it has a property of being made of matter. Now, it's got something called spin and angular momentum, and spin we'll come to in a bit later, because spin is something where if people say they understand it, I want to meet them, and I'd like them to share their deep understanding of what's going on with me, because I have an understanding through math, symmetry, and a bit of understanding of certain processes together. I sort of have sort of an understanding. It's almost like you hear of someone tangentially from groups of friends and from parties and from newspaper articles, but you've never met them. It's a bit like politicians or someone like that, someone who's big and you never meet. And you never discount the fact that one day I may understand spin, but spin's something, or it's going to blow your mind. Okay, so we've got the nucleus, and the nucleus, the hydrogen, was made immediately after the Big Bang, and then more than 50% of the hydrogen, say there are 7 hydrogens, 7 hydrogens made at the Big Bang, the very first, fractions of a second of the Big Bang. All the hydrogen on Earth is made in a tiny, it was a bloody crowded bus, because it's about probably the size of a bus, all the hydrogen was made, and in that case, of those 7, 4 of them stuck together to make a helium, and within that first 12 minutes of the Big Bang, it really had sort of tailed away, and you're left with 25% of the universe is helium, and 75% is hydrogen, But bloody hell, each helium has got 4 hydrogen units in it. So there's actually more helium by mass in the universe than hydrogen. This is one of these things that doesn't get explained, because you pass it to these, your handball, just take an AFL story, you got the fact, you handball it to someone and they're just not a footy player. Or she was. Oh. Wow. Sorry. There's a ranger station with a light from it, and I am at this mist here going down to the gorge, and I can see this beautiful halo of my scattering. You can't see any colours in it, but it's a beautiful white halo that I'm walking through. So it's almost like I'm beginning to walk into another dimension, and it's this beautiful thing to see, and it's all in front of you. And as you walk, the halo moves ahead with you. It's the most beautiful thing. And this is a real example of this sort of aggressive classical education. People can't see that the classical education is doing them damage. And you point out to them rainbows and halos and stuff like that. This is the most incredible halo I've seen. It's like it's a full circle halo. I wish I could remember the degrees, angles from it. So it's like my head is the top of the cone. I can see this cone in front of me. I just want to talk about a lot of phenomena that I say, oh, since I say, oh, this is an unusual phenomena, people cannot see it. They've been conditioned not to see phenomena. But you're going to have to go with me. You have a choice now. You can switch this podcast off, or you can, gosh, this is going to be a hard walk coming up. I've got to take it slowly because it's a fairly steep road here. Okay, so, and it should be beautifully quiet here. It is incredibly quiet when the mist is in, there's darkness and there's mist in the bush here. And I'll be able to hear any wallabies. It's hard to say, there's not much megafauna around here because okay, I can just see a frog, but anything big, clear, if there's been a dog anywhere near, you're not going to get any kangaroos around here. They're pretty smart things. Okay, we're back here, and we're back onto the nucleus, the proton, which is at the heart of every hydrogen. And we're going to zone those protons up, and we're going to speak to those individual protons, every part of your brain, by this magical thing called the MRI scheme. And those protons are going to report back their conditions, and they're going to report back in such a way that they can tell people that the blood flow is good or there has been a stroke. And as we are living in a fantastic age that we can now marry up, you know, research techniques, model things beyond our wildest dreams, and actually tell where things are, and come to it's this marvelous thing that on one aspect there are people who are not benefiting from this. Well, everyone benefits from the technology, but some people, it wrecks their lives. The information's horrible to it. But there's this beautiful gracefulness of, I have the information now, what's the best tactic forward? What's the damage? What's the best tactic forward? There may even be opportunities here, or to pick things up, to make sense of all the adjustments, to get through through the situations. But we're here, I'm telling you that these protons can be interviewed by this enormous magnetic field, and they can tell back, they can speak back to us at every point how they are, and it can actually monitor where the health of the brain to a degree that would not be possible. Even if you cut open the brain nowadays, you wouldn't be able to see it as close as that, because when you cut it open, it's just your eye looking at this wet, gooey stuff. It actually doesn't tell the brain, you know, what its situation is, that, you know, how it's away. So this proton, which is sitting in the middle of the hydrogen, must send some sort of signal to the outside brain and interview around it. And that's what happens, is we interview the individual protons, and the proton is interviewing the region around the brain. And so what we do is we say, hey, Mr. Proton, what's this area of the brain like? And it says, mate, it's like this. G'day, mate. Shh. Right, mate. And really, all the protons pretty much say, right. And we actually listen to this. We do signal analysis of the g'day, mate. Every proton goes, she's right, mate. All right. Fine round here. And then we can see subtle differences in that that we can take away. Now, let's talk into this most amazing fact about the proton. The proton has these things called angular momentum and spin. Now, angular momentum is something that you can possibly understand. And one of the things that I think you can, I want to do is you can sort of feel angular momentum when you're in your car and you go around a corner, and you can feel yourself pushed around. Or if you can imagine those hammer throws, those Scottish hammer throws, that person is getting angular momentum here. And perhaps if I can sort of scare you a bit, the idea of one of those angle grinders spinning around, and if that angle grinder rake up, it will go forward. That spinning motion is angular momentum. In fact, angular momentum is defined by the mass, the speed, and the distance from the axis is the angular momentum. And what that means is conservation of angular momentum is that if I bring in, if I've got something spinning and I pull it towards me, it's going to spin faster because the radius is smaller. It's r times v is constant as it comes in. And so what you'll see is people will often say in physics lectures, and watch this ballerina pulling her arms in, and she spins more quickly. And all she's doing, it, you may see art, but I see conservation of angular momentum. And then you might, if the physics teacher is any good, sit you on a seat and spin you round, and get you to bring your arms in, you spin fast and you go, whoa, like this. Or if you've got any heart, and I'll tell you what, someone took the school's bike wheel. If you hold a bike wheel and you can move it, you can feel this funny thing called angular momentum. Now, angular momentum is not to be laughed at. It's the thing that Newton forgot about, because he only talked about momentum. He didn't talk about angular momentum. And he, Einstein and Newton talked about frames of reference and the Newtonian, or Galilean transform, that is, there is, in terms of linear momentum, there is no absolute frame of reference. Okay, that's Galileo said it, but then Newton in his formulation said there is, then Einstein said there's no absolute frame of reference for linear momentum. So that's, I don't know, I don't want to say you chuck a bowling ball at your mum, get it to catch it. I just, to get you the sort of thing is the most emotional view. Someone chucks you a bowling ball at you and it gets you to catch it. Now, I just want to tell a small story of angular momentum, also linear momentum, and the lack of understanding of it. In the Napoleonic Wars, there was reported as an Irish regiment, and I read it somewhere. It's in the database somewhere. I can't do it. But this person saw a cannibal coming towards him relatively slowly. He said, "Look, lads, let's stop it." And it was actually travelling not that fast. And he stuck his foot out, and it just shattered his leg because he didn't understand the angular momentum of it. He was going to deflect it with his leg, and he definitely did have a rather short Napoleonic War. And I suppose I'm saying that to actually imprint it in you. Now, you might be able to hear the frogs coming up, to imprint on you the idea. I'm going to have to really push myself this time, mate, to really imprint on you. And it's a fair amount of rain, so I'm going to have to watch here because this creek may be flooded. I don't want to cark myself here. Yeah, and so there's a bit of a catchment up here, and generally takes us about a day. It's difference between when the flood waters rise up here, so I've got to watch what's coming off. So angular momentum is this fantastic thing. It's not linear momentum, it's a fantastic thing that the entire universe, there is no absolute frame of linear momentum. But angular momentum is totally, totally different. It's just amazingly different. That I can actually, there is an absolute zero rotation for angular momentum. There is a zero, and I can find it anywhere, because I can actually get a top and spin it anywhere in the universe and tell you where the zero axis of angular momentum is, the known non-rotation. It's just one of these things that it's the symmetry of the universe. You've got these different symmetries. This is X direction, Y direction, Z direction. You also have X rotation, rotational symmetry, and your pitch and your, those are absolutely fixed. And because it's like this standard stuff that it's hard to actually understand something within something. It's hard to pick up that this is a really fantastic thing. So too with culture. If everything's set up to you in a cultural framework, it's really hard to think outside it. And therefore you can see it's really dangerous that if people want to shape a cultural dimension for them of teaching certain things to certain levels and keeping everyone ignorant, they create a sort of a totally unnecessary cultural world. Now, this is really relevant in that things, part of the symmetry of things coming together. Sorry, this is getting really dark here. There's a little light on my dictaphone, and it's like almost, there's this little LED light, and it's really actually affecting my night vision. I'll point it away from me. There you go. Okay. Angular momentum is fantastic, and you sort of got to understand how it's conserved and how a proton is made. So a proton is made by energy coming together from opposite directions and like spinning around and knotting itself in a swirl, and that swirl's locking itself in space, but that space has been collapsed such that it preserves angular momentum. Alright, you might say, well, this swirl, multi-dimensions what are you going about, mate? Well, I can say to you that this level of understanding, I do understand things to a slightly higher level, is S2 symmetry. Coming together of these two dimensions to unlock our simplified world, where there is an absolute rotation, is resulted in the particles within our world having S2 symmetry. That is, a proton has to rotate not 360 degrees. That is, imagine your girlfriend, your boyfriend, or your loved one, and you say, I want you to spin around, look at me, spin around, and kiss me. Okay, I'm only saying that to give you a cognitive spur, you know, kiss, throw, hurt, feel, stuff like that. Now what they have to do, because they are S2, they have to spin around twice. And if you can spin around, you can see they spin around 360 degrees. They're not seeing the, if they spin around, normally in your world, if they spin 180 degrees, you see the back of the head. This time, they, in their world, spin around 360 degrees and you only get to the back of the head. And they have to spin around a second time, oh, it squeaks. Doddle. It's actually, I don't have to wade through it or anything. It's beautiful at night down here. And it's great here. And then, I'm going to go up this slope here. Just going to make sure I don't fall in the water here. Okay. So just crossing this, fording this stream. That's all going well. Okay. So I'm telling you that electrons and protons have this property that a rotational property, angular momentum property, from their creation. It's just a bit of a flood risk. I was about to put my foot in some water. If I safely put myself out there, the water's rising up a little bit. Okay. So I'm now going up the this road. So I'll just take it slowly as I'm going up. Oh. And this is part of the, you know, I've just got to do just so much training. So I'm a pretty old guy, but I've just got to really push myself. Okay. Okay. Now just let's try and look, my medical advisor has said, well, you've got to push yourself even more. You've got to go harder. You've got to find more time. You've got to do it more intense. Well, I am going harder. And it is a toughie. But okay, feeling a lot better here. Okay, getting back to this thing, the idea, I want to get your head a little bit into the idea of how these particles are made and how these particles are made by energy swirling together, creating mass and creating its mass, but creating a static angular momentum. That is, it's sitting there in a way that you can't see it spinning around, but it's made in our universe from its spun. It's spun. And it's got, when it spins around, it actually has to spin around twice. That's part of the deal. I must admit, didn't have an understanding of it, been wiped out. I might get it back again one day. This is, I suppose, the advantage is that I did have the understanding. Then I had a memory that I couldn't tell people about it because I'd get fucked. Now I've gotten sufficient to tell you about it. Now, this is a row thing. That the electron itself is not spinning because it's not physically spinning the way that you would spin a coin or something, because you can't mark a part of the electron to see it spin. You can't actually say, as you would normally do with a motor or an axis, get a little piece of white out in a lamp and get a photo detector and see it spin. You can't see that. However, it is spinning, but not in our... We're spinning our universe, but not in our conceptual universe. Okay? It is physically spinning. And the electron has a thing for, we can see with charges, so the mass of the electron is in how far it's out, and with the charge, and this factor that when it spins once, it actually spins twice internally, is given by this magic factor of 2. Well, a factor of 2 is a little bit more added into it, because there's a bit more physics to it, and I'll explain it to you. But so it's a factor of 2. Factor of 2 plus a little bit more. Because as it spins, it encounters more virtual electrons. That is, electrons that could exist and don't exist momentarily with it as it spins around. And this effect adds that little bit more to it. And it's actually supposedly easy to calculate. That's one part I've got to revise and get on top of, Feynman diagrams and stuff like that. But this is a little bit more. And that little bit more is one of the most accurately determined things in science. We've been able to measure this factor. It's a Bohr magnetron, I think, which is a modification thing which links the angular momentum with the magnetic pole moment. So, in your toaster or in your speaker, we can make magnets. So you're listening to me by a coil of wire in a magnetic field. The coil is pushing back and forward as the wire moves back and forward. So that current creates a magnetic field, and we can do all the calculations of that, and supremely accurately. And there's one of these great bonuses for all this advanced physics. It's not that we're going to find we might be able to find something different, but you know what, we're not finding anything different. We are actually doing what Lord Kelvin, who I just thoroughly dislike as an individual, just really dislike him. Okay, there's a few people in physics that people are, you like all them. Certain people I really hate. I don't really hate him. I hate Mark. Certain people who, he was a bit of a bully. And there's been a few bullies, and I just really dislike this. The science, no service whatsoever. And, but what's happening is that we're gaining more and more gold-plated, platinum-plated, confidence that we have thoroughly nailed it. So, we have this thing, a quantum mechanical thing, called spin. Associated with spin is rotation, but not rotation, a physical form of rotation that you can see. So the proton, you cannot put a mark on the proton and spin it. That doesn't, it's not that I'm a killjoy. It just, I don't know. It's sort of like, what can you say? It's, I'm not saying people lose intelligence if they do it, but they haven't got it. It's sort of like, I wish I could think of someone not, I suppose the closest equivalent, someone going to a whole lecture on classification of children's television and then saying, well, will I be exposed if I show killings? And you go, no, they won't. they can't see the implication. They really can't see the implication of their question. They can't see the implication of their question of interpretation. It just signifies things to go back. And in so many things in life, it's the actual significance of it to go back with it. So we have this thing of spin. The physical spin is this 720 degrees physical rotation in our dimensions to get into its dimensions, and it doesn't have an existence in our dimensions, and this spin. And the idea of spin and antimatter came up from Dirac, who got the Schrodinger wave equation, which is fairly loose. No, it was correct, but it had mass and dimensions in it, and they just put a relativistic formulation that is included that things can't go faster than the speed of light. You can't have a velocity greater than the speed of light. So if you want things to have a high momentum, a low mass, and eventually high speeds, things happen. And the result of this is that the four vectors of the matrix formulation for the relativistic formation of the Schrodinger wave equation had four components of relativity. There's nothing too spectacular about it. This is x, y, z, and time. And to put that in, you have matter, antimatter, spin up, spin down. And then you have the spin tensors, and then eventually you found antimatter. So you've got these variety of things outside our knowledge and existence. Oh, it'll be relatively easy now. Outside our normal existing, I'm sweating like a pig. Bloody hell. Okay, so we've got these... Oh, sorry. My little... I'm a live light. I looked down, it was gone, but it's pointing away from me. Okay. So we've got these variety of things. It's going to be... walk up and be quiet and listen for just a sec here. So that's what we had to do in the army all the time, is be walking for a while, and then everyone would be timed to stop and listen automatically. So what would happen is that basically every so many paces you'd know to stop, and then you would just listen and hear it spookily quiet going up here. So the mist has killed all the traffic noise, and these are really faint noises from several kilometers away. Okay, so we're up here with spin, and spin has got an angular momentum amount of it, and it's to do with the dimension of the it's really linked into all quantum mechanics, that both an electron, a photon, a light, a proton, they're all have a change in angular momentum of 1 h, which is related to the pixel size of everything. It all comes out in the wash, quite honestly. The size of something, its angular momentum, the bulkiness of it. This is one of the things people say. You know, you pick something up and you ask people what are the properties. They will tell you mass, temperature, expense. Won't tell you bulk. for some reason. And this is, a small kid will tell you bulk. It's big, but someone who's been to school or who's been taught science will not see that. But the bulkiness of something, is to do, with the Planck's constant and the angular momentum. So, a proton will have a magnetic moment because it's got some charge in it, it's of its wave function. So I suppose you could think of it spinning, but it's actually not spinning. And this magnetic field is like this little north-south pole. Now, one of the things is that if you have a north-south pole in a magnetic field, it will tend to align with the field. An example of that is a compass. So your compass has a north pole and it points to the south magnetic pole. So yeah, you lose up in the northern hemisphere. We stole your north pole. The south magnetic pole is in the northern hemisphere because your north pole magnets point to the south magnetic pole. Go get that in your thing there. So, we'll just get that. That really doesn't matter. But your needle will point directly there. But if your needle was a gyroscope, it couldn't point, it would have a torque to that point, and basic classical physics says that as it tries to get to the North Pole, it will have a turning force out of the page, and it will gyrate around the field line. And indeed, protons in your body will all point naturally to the local magnetic field line. Okay, now just get this inside your head. So every proton inside you is a little compass, and it will always, all those little compasses will always point to the north of those compasses will point to the north pole. Okay, just get it in your head. The north pole, you're up in the northern hemisphere. So as you turn around, all your compasses will follow there. Now, there's sort of a collective phenomena that some of the, you'll have stray magnetic fields. You might bring a magnet in front of you, a weak magnet in front of you, and they will face there. Now, you can actually flip your compass, your magnetic field around by the absorption. There's a quantized state, and it's a quantized state where it's anti-parallel, and it doesn't like it. And thermal effects. The thing is that in general, these things don't really radiate very much. So I don't know. It's basically how much heat and light do you get out of a warm sock as compared to a blazing fire. The light emission, think of something which has got a large gap, a short wavelength, it's very fast. Something which is so low as the magnetic field. So what can I say? Your protons are little magnets, And they have they gyrate or precess around the magnetic field, and they have a tendency that they can point anti the magnetic field. They don't point directly around it, they point, and so they process around it. And this is a very long, long wavelength, because it's a very low energy, because it's just a very weak magnetic field of the Earth. Now the deal changes very much, and just wait for this. So each proton in your body is aligning towards the magnetic field, and it's lazily rotating around, and it's each one is rotating probably a little slightly different, at a different point. Rotating at a different point, so some will be start off at 0 degrees, some will start off at 5, 1, all the way up to 360 degrees. All this is spread, nice and gentle, and gotta think of the spin. Oh yeah, gotta think of the 21 wavelength, hyperfine splitting in hydrogen, 21 centimeter. I've got to really. Oh yeah, it's a atomic hydrogen. We're talking about the nucleus. Okay, I was just getting my ideas. See, this is bloody hell. This is a bit spooky walking around at the meeting. So, oh gosh, it's going to be hard. I'll just walk up to this area. I think there'll be. It's only this is only a 6K walk after all this is said and done. See if I'm still got some battery power. Nothing upset me more. Okay, so let's step back for a moment. We got a brain. We want to interrogate in three dimensions every proton in there and ask it about its surroundings. And we've got a trick. We know that every proton has got this magnetic field and a spin, and so it's slaved to the area around it. It's poling, looking around it all the time as it's slowly spinning around. And we've got a trick, and obviously you know the trick. Is you put it on a thumping big magnetic field that was thought to be technically impossible. That's a 2 Tesla. Like, this is massive, this is insane. So we use superconductors to create a magnetic field that has never previously been seen on the planet. Something that you might see at the surface of a star or something like that. These are enormous magnetic fields. And guess what? We stick your head in the middle of them. Now, these magnetic fields do something. It means that the energy to flip the proton with its north to the north of the field and the south becomes quite substantial. And it becomes substantial enough to be flicked by your mobile phone energy or radio signals, because a radio signal is a light signal. I probably haven't explained it all that quick. Now how does how's this done? Well, you can, again, it's all quantum mechanics, and normally you do light transmissions by the dipole transition moment. It's a magnetic transition moment, so you just put B in there. One day I'll get in and do the quantum mechanics spec and have a check on all this. But we've got this spin up, spin down, given to us from the creation of the universe. The fact that, you know, you can feel giddy. There's angular momentum's all around us, and this angular momentum can be flipped. I can actually add some spin into this device and actually get it to flip and change its angular momentum by h, and it will absorb a radio wave. Now, now, let's say that we absorb it, and we put them, they're all at the lower state, and we start pumping energy in, and we start to pump things up to the upper shelf, and if we stop pumping, the natural effect, long-term effect of them going from the upper shelf, then it's only the upper shelf forever, dropping down, they will drop down and radiate out the energy. So what you can do is you can pump energy into it, and as soon as you stop pumping energy, you can listen straight away. So you go, ah, like that, and trying to hear this straight afterwards. And of course, that's bloody awful. You're trying to listen to the quiet squeak, and you just shouted like all hell into it. So that doesn't work. So there's this fantastic technique. Okay, so get yourself, sit back and think about it. This is just beyond belief. So what happens is that all your protons are got different angles, and by putting them to the top and bottom of the shelf, up and over again, you can actually get them all to rotate at the same rate around. And so they're spinning. It's called a Lamour frequency. And they're spinning around. And by actually powering them up and down to the same amount, such as 50% at the top, 50% at the bottom, so your energy, your radio frequency just shelf shifts it. And it's dumb. It shelves things from the bottom shelf to the top shelf, top shelf to the bottom shelf. Now, what happens is that as you start putting things in the top shelf, your top shelf gets filled and starts putting down to the bottom shelf. And if you're keeping on swapping above and below this level, you can actually get all the protons spinning at the same time. So imagine these ballerinas all spinning just this way or that, but they all start spinning at the same time. And so every time they face towards you, their faces towards you, spin around, it all looks fantastic. And so this pulse, the strength of this pulse, the duration of this pulse, determines the length, and the length of the strong pulse starts to line them all up in the same direction. Now, what happens is that they get distracted. Every proton gets distracted, and you have this virtual vector. Okay, so if you can get this into your head, you've got a virtual vector. You've got 50% pointing up. Say, if it's 0 degrees is up, 5 degrees, and 75 degrees pointing down. 50% at 5, 50% pointing down at 75, and the average of those two, if they're lined up, those two vectors spinning together will be close enough to spin together and produce a virtual vector at composed of two protons. So two protons put in harmony, spinning at the same rate, will produce 50 up and 50 down, because that's the maximum you can't do. You can't you cannot break the laws of physics. You can't get a population inversion happening. So population inversion is basically when you get more on the top shelf than the bottom shelf. You're not lazy, okay, but you're getting pretty close to it. You've got 50% at the top shelf, 50% at the bottom shelf, and in sync, So because they're in sync angular wise, they're around the axis. It's been synced, so the syncing time. Bloody hell. Can you imagine when students start probing you to ask questions? You got to be careful. You just have to say, too much, we want to get you through the exam, just rote learn this piece of paper, come back to me later. And of course, your understanding is confused because the textbook isn't telling you this basic information. But it is so, because you can well imagine if you know the quantum physics going into it, you get to this point. And so what happens is that the the magnetic field flips it, but really what the magnetic field is, it creates a virtual vector which spins at the Langmuir frequency going around, gyroscopic frequency going around at 90 degrees to the magnetic field. So get that. And the other ones you can't really detect. You obviously can't detect things at 5 degrees, but you create a virtual one at 90 degrees. And this 90 degrees one rotates, and every part of your brain scrambles it, because the one part of your brain, the magnetic field, will be slightly different. The rotation frequency will be slightly different. It doesn't take too many rotations, a few thousand rotations, a few milliseconds, you know, thousands of a second, and you've lost the signal. You've got your vector there, but the vector's all out of phase. Right? And so, bloody hell, what's there's going to be a solution here? Haven't you got it? Well, then you have the second pulse. Your first pulse is how strong and long you do to set up your vector. Then your vector's been built, and your vector will eventually shrink, because it's this your virtual vector in the 90 degree vector will disappear. It's not there when it'll just disappear and shrink. You've got to have 50% inversion to get an up, you know, one up and one down added together and in sync. Oh, a sync to go. And so as you lose your inversion, you lose it. And so as it's sampling the tissue around itself, it dephases. Oh, here we're going up to the end of Europa clearing. Okay, so it dephases. I know no one's going to be bloody well listening to this. Okay, so you have your second pulse, T1 pulse and T2. And this is the damn thing. The damn thing is that you have two pulses, but they refer two lengths of two pulses, T1, T2, but there's two decay rates, also called T1, T2, which have got really nothing to do directly with the T1, T2. So you've got Confusion City reigning here. It's almost going to have some sort of John Wayne type come in and clear this entire thing. And we're almost there, mate. We are almost there. So your second pulse does this miraculous thing. It doesn't shake it up all that much and realign all the phases again. All it does is that it inverts the pulse, the direction. So if your pulse in the 90 degrees plane, so we're now looking at degrees of the 90 degrees thing, is at a particular phase, it flips it 180 degrees around, right? And so the fastest ones, which have gone the furthest around, are now inverted and put the furthest behind. And the slowest ones are put in front. by flipping it over 180 degrees. So you can imagine a race with these people racing around the track, the bloody people who are super fit and the unfit people like me, not walking, going as fast. And then what happens is God comes in and flips the racetrack through 180 degree rotation and moves the start line. The finish line now becomes the start line, and people are running the opposite direction. So people have head off because of this 180 degrees are put further back. And so what happens is that I just keep on running my slow rate. The people who are running at the fast rate at other parts of the tissue, this is a really small section of tissue, come back. And I have to go into, as I describe, I realize, I don't fully understand this. However, what happens is that at the very time that these little nuclei really line up again, so they've been set off in step, and then they walk for a amount of time, all at different paces. Then the second time you hit it with the second 180 degrees pulse, T2 pulse. This is T1 pulse, T2 pulse. Okay, now, flip it and it will echo. It is called a nuclear echo device. You get your neutrons, your protons inside your body, in this magnetic field, release a radio signal. They phone home. And they phone home with just a "how's your father" type of stuff. Now, however, there are two time things. One is the rate at which, once they're there, they go, it's the amount of time to decohere, and the amount of time between, so you can exchange your time between echoes and see the effect on the decay rate. So if you, flick it. So you've got two things you can do, basically. There's buckets of things you can do, but there's two things which you can do to actually change the response of a particular piece of tissue. One is how long you hit it first, and how long you hit it with the repeat echo, and also the timing between when you do the repeat. So there's actually three. Three things you can do with it. But that being said, you then get two decay constants. So you hear ding. This is oi. Hear it come back. But you can hear when that oi comes back, how long it decays in that oi. And there are two time constants with that echo oi, which you can pick up. And the two time constants, I have to admit, now I'm thinking about it, it's not that clear in my head. I'm sorry after dragging you through all this, but they're T1 and T2. T1 is the top shelf, bottom shelf decay, how long it takes to decay. And the T2 is how quickly they're being spread out. Okay, so you've got two things that can happen. One is that it can be put in the top shelf, that its north pole pointed towards the north pole of the magnet, because your north pole points to your south pole normally. Okay, sorry mate, that's the way it goes. I've got a north pole magnet. The north pole magnet will point to the south pole of the applied field. So how long it takes to flip back to that applied field with nothing going on. Just, it's going, oh buddy, I'm picking things up, oh crap, you know, you get yourself up. I don't know how you describe it. And then the other thing is, that's rotating along, there's another time constant to what's the actual spread, running spread. So if they're all sort of the East German running team, they're all fast sprinters, they'll all stay together quite a bit before they finish. But if they're, if you just get random people on the bus, there'll be some athletes, some young people, some elderly people and walkers, they'll all go around. So you get two sorts of feels. How stable they are for inversion and how spread they are apart. So you actually get two images for the price of one. And one of these things that is, as I'm reading, I'm saying, oh shit, oh, I shouldn't say that. So bloody hell, you might be able to get several pulses in. And of course, that's what they're doing. You know, I think about 5 years ago, they now go bing and then two or three echoes and just pick up, it's sort of like data city, the amount of data they can get out this time. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing they can get anything out. Okay, so you have, in fact, when you get an MRI scan, you get two scans for the price of one. Probably three scans. You get basically the strength of signal, which is just your water density. Then you get the decay signal. So how much you leave it for, how much of the time, how much it decays. You flip the decays. And then you also get T2, the spread signal. And this is where it's confusing, my friends, because the decay signal is T1, and your spread decay, you know, how much it spreads out, is T2. Yet, you set T1 and T2, they just should bloody well, I shouldn't say bloody, but they should select a different code, and I think I'm going to make a declaration. I think if they're teaching at school, they should teach it properly. And teach it with a bit of humility, I think, rather than someone who's just older reading a textbook just before going to class and sort of, I don't know, intimidating people into believing them. Because I go past people and they say, oh, look, I'm doing this thing with the spinning top and, you know, it's, oh, I don't know. Okay. So, you get about three signals. The intensity, you know, the broad intensity signal. And then, how much that intensity decays, and how much that intensity, when you hear it back, decoheres, hears. And so you get these T1, T2 signals. Now, there is a way that you can actually add and subtract and mix the T1 and T2 signals so you get fluid relaxation things. And now what you can do is that for a particular setting of your input T1, T2, right, your output T1, T2, which have got nothing to do directly with your T1 and T2 signals, you can get them and you can tweak them up such they precisely cancel out the brain fluid, cerebral fluid. Then what you're left over is a sensitive map of, I don't know whether it's fat, but the actual cell health of your brain. And this is called a flare fluid, something rather, I'll get the flare, that's your flare signal. And so, your friends, we have come a long, long, big journey, and I'm doing rather well here. I'll see if I can, what I can do here. My wife's gonna hit the roof saying, how come you're bloody out so long, but I have to do this, do these things. And so, I didn't believe I'd get to this point in time because it's such a long, thing of understanding it, and then you suddenly say, you've really got no one to speak to, okay? So, it's in your head, you've got no one to speak to, and so, sort of just sitting there in sort of like this long camel train of, of thoughts or how things are understood, and you're not really putting it together as a story. Oh my God, this is this actually beautiful cloud at night. It's now cleared up in this clear sky. Be a beautiful day tomorrow. And what's more is that people have cancelled all of their stuff because it's been such heavy rain. But what's happening here is that there's these beautiful clouds, which are getting the reflected light of Sydney. So it's glowing thing on the horizon. Okay, so we've got this process here that the bottom line here is that we have this flare signal. So flare is the stuff. The other thing tells you brain morphology, the plumbing, the blood flow and that stuff like that. But this actually is a flare signal, is what you go to. You physically your head in a magnet, you do this flare signal, which sets T1 and T2 decay rates, and their strength with a long T1, a long T2. So a long one gets them all lined up, a long T2 gets them all sampled up, and then for these decay rates to come across. Now there's a whole lot more subtle things. Why, you know, if you had to ask questions, well, why wouldn't a short T2, what would happen there? I'll eventually be able to answer those questions, but I'm at this stage. I've just, you know, I had the MRI scan. I didn't know to look through the files and actually pick it up, but I'm on that, and hopefully this will explain what's going on, and the poor people who really need to listen to this won't listen to it. Perhaps some people will listen to it out there, and so it's giving great information, and we are probably at a stage that we'll be able to go across, but I don't think we're in our lifetime at a stage where we'll be able to get to magically target and repair sections, but I think the brain's a marvellous thing, and it's able to do a modicum of repair here, and it's like any renos. It's like your brain's been renovated. It's like any reno. There's something about DIY. Yeah, do it yourself. DIY. There you go. Bloody hell. DIY. Any like reno, DIY. It's a DIY reno. And there is, it may not look good, it may not hold up as well, it may fall apart, but you've had the joy and the activity of doing a DIY stuff. And I don't know, you're perhaps a benefit by actually being a bit neglected and actually working at how you do it yourself. Because you don't grow a dependency on doing it. Is that? Oh, that must be the moon. Wow. God, no, so the mist is clearing. You can just see a lone house light on a ridge up there. Looks like it's pretty weird. That's amazing that I've got to climb up that huge ridge. So let's do a summary of it again. There's certain circumstances in which you'll want to do, you will be exposed to this. As far as I can see, it was smoking, just give it away. You should just plaster your brain like anything. Various diseases, but any sort of heart, you know, pretty hard on heart condition, or flow. Throw off clots and cut to the chase, do an MRI, do a flare, and these little things will pick up, and I think it's really the first stage, I cannot see these things not being chewed up by artificial intelligence and image processing. That, like, they're really in at the infancy of that, and so this process is going to really take off, and we're really going to see a great dawn. And it's sort of like the enclave of advanced scientists leading the medical people, and the specialists are coming across, but there's really a second front for us, the normal people out there, the physicists, to actually walk across and actually step across. So a lot of the physics has been simplified for doctors. Like, I don't think the S2 symmetry, which is just like, I don't know. It is something amazing to actually, so this is the S2 symmetry, which is the 720 degrees. So it is amazing to see people having a negative reaction to something they can't understand, whereas there's something so profound about not being able to have anything that I can show you which has S2 symmetry. Perhaps a Mobius strip, but it's sort of like that's not too much. But then, what's that, there's in future, it's just, I think people in future generations can say, we come with this age of great advancement. What was going on? What were they trying to achieve by being slow in communicating this with our fellow human beings? What was going on? In various ages, there was the thought of a class distinction. And that is that the nobles and people learnt to read, and all those serfs don't really require it. But it's the serfs themselves, it's us normal people who are knocking about, keeping ourselves down. I'm only saying this is in terms of that it's great things to comprehend, or to sense that one cannot comprehend it. Surely that's almost equally, there's very little benefit. I may feel happy once I've understood something, but I get a lot more out of not understanding something or wondering about something, and then finding, oh, bloody hell, I've had a explanation incorrect, or I've not paid attention on that lecture, or I've just made an assumption. So there's a full range of what a full emotional life you can have with a physics book. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll go on to the next topic, whatever it is. Thanks a lot.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.